Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
On a visit to Poland, President Biden underscores U.S. backing for Ukraine. And sanctions are not just hitting Russian companies. How the conflict in Ukraine has stopped collaboration with Russian scientists in the Arctic.
I think the worry is that we're just going to be delayed in our understanding and monitoring of climate change, which is already, of course, having various impacts. And, you know, the clock is really running out.
Plus, why after a swell of generosity, people are tipping less. It's Friday, March 25th. I'm Lori Herosa for The Wall Street Journal, filling in for Anne-Marie Fertoli. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. President Biden met with U.S. troops at a hub for Western military aid in Poland today, spotlighting the administration's efforts to support neighboring Ukraine. The town of Rzeszów has become a major resupply artery for delivering humanitarian aid, weapons, and other supplies across the border to Ukraine. Speaking to service members of the 82nd Airborne, President Biden said their engagement is also part of a larger question.
Our democracy is going to prevail and the values we share, or autocracy is going to prevail. And that's really what's at stake. So what you're doing is consequential, really consequential.
Biden also met with Polish President Andrzej Duda the day after the two attended the NATO summit. The leaders spoke with humanitarian workers about the growing refugee crisis. According to the UN, most of the 3.7 million people who have left Ukraine crossed the border into Poland. Meantime, Russia's defense ministry said today that it's shifting its military operations to the eastern part of Ukraine. The statement suggests Russia may be reassessing its ambitions after failing to take the capital of Kyiv or any other major Ukrainian city. In Afghanistan, the Taliban has banned women from traveling more than 48 miles unless they have a male chaperone. It's just the latest in a series of restrictions that are reaffirming fears that women's rights would again be limited under Taliban rule. WSJ foreign correspondent Margarita Stankati says the new guardianship rules are being imposed in an even stricter way.
So, for example, in one province called Ghazni, we found that women were literally being denied medical treatment if they showed up in some hospitals without a male guardian. And it wasn't just an order that they issued, it was actually being enforced. So we had patrols of the Taliban's religious police that would regularly inspect hospitals to see if, for example, there were women without a male relative in the hospital. And when they did find one woman on one occasion, they actually beat her up with a rifle. That's the account that one doctor in one hospital shared with us.
Earlier this week, the Taliban also reneged on its pledge to reopen schools for girls over sixth grade. They've been closed since last year. U.S. stocks wobbled Friday but continued their rebound for a second straight week, even though rising interest rates threatened to temper gains. The S&P and the NASDAQ both ended the week up more than 1%. The Dow was up just 0.3% for the week. Instacart says it's cutting its valuation by 38% to $24 billion, saying it reflects the market turbulence impacting tech companies. The delivery market has been facing an increase in competition, higher labor and transportation costs, grocery shortages, and a return to in-person shopping. The company has been looking to expand beyond grocery operations with an advertising business and by building out services like warehouses and in-store technology for retailers. And Senator Joe Manchin, the Democrat from West Virginia, says he intends to support the nomination of Supreme Court nominee Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson. It's a significant step. Manchin's announcement helps remove some uncertainty in the evenly divided Senate. Arizona Senator Kyrsten Sinema, another centrist Democrat, hasn't said how she plans to vote, But she told reporters she was impressed after she met with Judge Jackson. The Russian invasion of Ukraine has upended international business relationships, but it's also stalling scientific research, including on climate change. We'll have more on that coming up.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
Russia is one of eight countries that control land and ocean territories in the region north of the Arctic Circle. And scientists say that area, along with Antarctica, regulates climates around the world. But Russia's invasion of Ukraine has led several Western scientific organizations to cut ties with the country, and it's put international climate change studies on hold or derailed them altogether. So what does that mean long-term for climate research? Here to break it down is WSJ science reporter Niti Subbaraman. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Niti, can you tell us how the international science community has responded to the Russian invasion?
Pretty much since we saw news of the invasion in Ukraine, the scientific community came out with statements in support of Ukrainian scientists, condemned the conflict, condemned the invasion, and began offering support to people and scientists leaving Ukraine. They also began putting out statements that said collaborations with Russian institutions and organizations would be on hold, at least for the discernible future. In some instances, this meant that research conferences that Russian scientists would attend as representatives of research institutions could not go ahead as planned because they wouldn't be able to attend.
So you reported that some of them would attend online, but some would not be there in person. Does this hamper the collaboration going forward?
Yes, this is what climate researchers have told me. Because science is such a collaborative effort, researchers have partnerships in multiple countries, and the Arctic itself, a lot of the research that happens in that region involves Russian scientists, and the Russian landmass and, you know, ocean territories make up a big part of that space. The concern is that if Russian scientists can't be there in person at some key conferences or participate in key research, there will be an incomplete understanding of how climate work will proceed in a region that is so important to understanding, you know, global climate at large.
So how important is that region, the North Arctic area, that Russia really does control? It controls access to this region.
So one of the key events that's already happening right now as far as climate-related changes is the thawing of permafrost, and a large portion of the Russian country is covered in this frozen ground that is thawing as a result of rising temperatures. And that releases greenhouse gases. It, you know, begins the decomposition of materials because microbes start chomping in on them. And the concern is that researchers will be limited in their ability to study or collect data or transmit data about this from a region where so much of it is happening.
Can you give us some historical context? It's taken a long time to build up these relationships, to have this kind of collaboration around the world.
I'm told that, yes, in particular since the end of the Cold War, you know, science and sort of political organizations have come together to forge partnerships across the eight countries in the Arctic, but also, you know, beyond that, to have these really fruitful and blossoming collaborations that bring researchers together regularly, have these modes by which they can work on projects and share data. And people are concerned that this is going to come to a little bit of an end and this conflict is going to throw things off. I think some of the organizers of meetings I've spoken to recognize that collaboration is key for scientific progress and it is going to disrupt, you know, critically needed climate research. But they told me that because of the nature of the conflict, they felt they had to take this step.
So what are the implications of this step moving forward, not just for scientists, but also for people around the world who live on this planet?
I think the worry is that we're just going to be delayed in our understanding and monitoring of climate change, which is already, of course, having various impacts. And the longer we wait to understand, the longer we wait to take action, and, you know, the clock is really running out.
Nidhi, are scientists doing anything to mitigate this?
Some organizers have said that participation with Russian scientists who are not affiliated with Russian organizations, you know, are still welcome in certain fora, and they are, you know, still recognizing that their colleagues are making important contributions, and they're sort of looking to see how this progresses. But I do think there's a lot of uncertainty about how projects will proceed in the future, and people are still wondering to see how the situation develops and what that will mean for their work in this region.
That's WSJ science reporter Nidhi Subbaraman. Thanks so much for being here, Nidhi.
Thanks for having me.
And finally, one of the silver linings during the pandemic for service workers were the tips. People started reaching deeper into their pockets at restaurants and for other services, some giving as much as 30%. But new research from Square suggests that inflation has put a dent in that generosity. Tipping is decreasing, and in some places more than others. Here's our personal finance reporter, JJ McCorvey.
It's delivery orders, cases where you don't have to tip people in person. You can kind of avoid the social pressure of tipping in person and do it from your phone or from your home. And also on pickup orders, I spoke to some folks who said that they, at their restaurants, they noticed that people weren't tipping at all on pickup orders, whereas earlier, maybe a year or so ago, people maybe felt compelled to help a little more.
You can listen to more about the changing habits of tipping on our sister podcast, Your Money Briefing. And that's what's news for this week. I'm Lori Herosa for The Wall Street Journal, filling in for Anne-Marie Fertoli. Our hosts this week were Luke Vargas and Janet Babin. The show was produced by Trinae Nori and Kate Boulevant, with help from Mohsen Ali, Anthony Bansi, Julie Chang, Zoe Thomas, and J.R. Whalen, and editorial support from Kateri Yoakum, Michael Kosmides, and Chris Zinsley. If you like what you hear, please rate us and review us. We'll be back Monday morning. Have a good weekend.